Shriyadvaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaupakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
I was just remembering when I first came to the society in 1968, Srila Prabhupada was just returning. He shortly after returned from India, where he'd gone after he'd had a stroke. And when he recovered his health, he came back. And at that time, he was lecturing on the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam concerning Prahlad Maharaj and Lord Nrisimhadev. And I remember he was lecturing in Montreal on this topic, and then he came to New York and went to Boston. So that was Prabhupada's system, that he wouldn't follow whatever the temple was doing. He had his own sequence, and he would continue lecturing as he traveled. And at that time, it was the mid-1960s, late-1960s, and the counterculture was in full force, and what Prabhupada called the hippie movement, as well as the... there were two little sociology here. There were the hippies who were sort of dropouts and so on, and then there were the revolutionaries. What was it? Students for a Democratic Society.
SDS.
Black Panthers, yeah. Who were intent on bringing about social change. Vietnam War was in full swing, and there were huge protest movements against the America's involvement in the Vietnam War. So that was all. The slogan of the time was, "Hey, hey, LBJ, how many kids did you kill today?" So that was something, gives you some idea of the spirit of the times. So Prahlad Maharaj was the perfect countercultural hero, because he stood up to the establishment in the form of Hiranyakashipu. His father asked him, "So Prahlad, what did you learn in the school? What was the best thing you learned?" He said, "The best thing, it was all rubbish what they were teaching me. But I learned about Shravanam Kirtanam, chanting and hearing about Vishnu. And I learned that the best thing for a foolish attached materialist like you is to give up householder life and go to the forest and take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna." This is what, in more recent terminology, it's called speaking truth to power. No one was as powerful as Hiranyakashipu. He would just if he would raise his eyebrows, the demigods would tremble, and they all became his order carriers. He was so powerful. And Prahlad Maharaj was a 5-year-old boy and didn't care how powerful Hiranyakashipu was. He told him straight that this materialistic life is all nonsense, and the real business is to surrender to Krishna. When he was sent to school, the same thing. He would take advantage of, Prabhupada said, the tiffin hours, means lunch break. And he'd call his friends together and say, "Let's talk about Krishna." And the friends would say, "Why should we talk about Krishna? We're young. This is for old people." "No, you don't know. You don't. You may be old now, because an old man is one who's about to die, and you could die at any second, any one of us." Besides that, now we're too young, and then we want to play, and then later it's the boy-girl thing, and then there's married life and working hard, and then in your old age, rocking. I remember back in 1942. So when are you going to take to Krishna consciousness? You spend half your life sleeping, that time is wasted. And then all the rest of the time is wasted in these ways. So when you should take to Bhagavad Dharma now, when you're 5 years old, before the opportunity slips away. So he was speaking to them very strongly, and he persuaded his friends, all these sons of the demons, he persuaded them about Krishna consciousness, and they all began chanting Hare Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada said, in this way, he ruined the whole school. So, of course, we liked that a lot. Those of us who left school or were against the school administration or the established lock you into it, materialistic meat grinder. We really warmed up to this topic that Prahlad Maharaj had just challenged his father also. We were not always on good terms with our parents because we, after all, first we joined the counterculture and then we dropped out of the counterculture to join the Hare Krishna movement, which was counterculture. We were so far counter that even the counterculture was too unstraight for us. Anyway, we rejected it. Instead of rejecting the counterculture for our parents' way of life, we rejected it for Prabhupada's message of Krishna consciousness. So Prahlad Maharaj was a great hero for the devotees. And Nrisimhadev was the greatest hero for the devotees because he was the one who would give us protection from the establishment, from our parents, from Maya, finally from the whole materialistic way of life, from the whole material world. So the topics of Prahlad and the Srinagar were very attractive.
So we'll read something from 7th Canto of Srimad Bhagavatam where these topics are discussed.
The Srinagar has appeared to in great anger to kill Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu was tormenting his son, Prahlad, and challenging the authority of the Lord. And finally the Lord burst out of the pillar and fought with the demon Hiranyakashipu and finally hoisted the demon on his lap and ripped him apart with his nails, keeping all of Lord Brahma's benedictions intact and fulfilling his own promise to protect the devotees and vanquish the demons. Prabhupada said Krishna appears more for the benefit of the devotees. To vanquish the demons, he can do with his material energy. Throw a hurricane, throw a Katrina, throw a tsunami, drop a tree on him. To get rid of a demon is not so hard. He can do that by indirect action. So he comes more to please his devotees. That's his purpose. And he's very kind to his devotees, and therefore, because the devotees are so much desiring the darshan of the Lord, the association of the Lord comes for their benefit. So Lord Nrisimhadev had come and torn apart the demon, Hiranyakashipu, and now he's sitting on his throne and roaring ferociously. We get intimidated when some dog barks at us, especially if it's a little bit of a big dog and it barks loudly. But we don't have experience of lions. If we see a lion that's in a zoo somewhere and it's nicely behind bars. We hardly see him. Maybe in the old MGM logo we see a lion roar for a moment. But for those animals in the forest, the roar of the lions is terrifying and loud also. So, and Lord Nrisimhadev, he's the supreme lion. And he's roaring ferociously. He's so angry. The anger, janmadyasyata, everything comes from Krishna. So anger also has its origin in Krishna. And he's supremely angry. One time, one devotee wrote to Srila Prabhupada and said that sometimes I become very angry. I forget whether he said he became angry at his wife, but anyway, he became angry. And he asked whether there's any secret for controlling anger. And Prabhupada said that there was. Just as for controlling lust, the secret is that you can think of the pastimes of Krishna with the gopis of Vrindavan. Said, so when you become angry, you can think of Lord Nrisimhadev. But you're only a little bit angry. He's unlimitedly angry. So when we're angry, we can think of Lord Nrisimhadev, the supreme angry, the ultimate angry. So he's supremely angry, and the demigods are all assembled. They're the ones who were praying for the Lord to come. Of Brahma, Indra, all of them, Varuna, Lakshmi, they're all there. And they're afraid. They're also afraid. They've never seen. They were praying for Lord Vishnu to come. They'd never seen this Vishnu with the form of half lion. And ripping apart a demon that way with his claws and still roaring. He hadn't put aside his anger, he's roaring. And Brahma especially was, and not especially, all of them were fearful. And so they tried to pacify the Lord by offering beautiful prayers to the Lord. The demigods are very exalted, and they can offer beautiful prayers in Sanskrit language. And so one after another, they try to pacify the Lord. Brahma and the Indra and the other demigods. And the Lord didn't show any sign of interest even in their prayers. Didn't even show no response. Just no response. He's still angry. Lakshmiji's offering prayers. She was afraid. She didn't know, is this my husband? Or is this somebody else? She'd never seen her husband so angry and in such a fierce form. So they all offered their prayers, but the Lord is still roaring ferociously. He's still angry. His anger is not subsiding. And then Brahma turns to Prahlad and he's pushing him forward. That the Lord came for you. You try to pacify the Lord. Mm-hmm. So Prahlad thought that who am I to pacify the Lord? All of these great demigods, they're so exalted, they're all in the mode of goodness, they're suras, devatas, and they've composed their prayers in beautiful Sanskrit language. And still the Lord is not pacified. So what can I do? I'm the son of a demon, Hiranyakashipu, the spirit of material enjoyment personified. So practically the demonic blood is running through my veins. So, and I'm just a child anyway. When all these great demigods have failed, what will I do? He didn't think, well, okay, now that the demigods have failed, here's my chance. He's thinking sincerely, what will I be able to do? But then he remembered that there was one elephant, Gajendra, who was in difficulty and prayed to the Lord, and the Lord saved him. So Prahlad Maharaj thought, well, if the Lord is so kind that he'll rescue even an elephant and accept his prayers, at least I'm a human being, so let me try on the request of the Brahmaji. So he began offering his prayers. He came forward, and the Lord was very pleased. Prahlad gradually went forward to try to satisfy the Lord, and seeing Prahlad Maharaj prostrated before him, Lord Nrisimhadev became very affectionate. He became very affectionate. First of all, naturally one is affectionate toward a child. You know, all the big demigods, they may be whoever they are. But if a little child is there, then naturally people are affectionate to him. Even if we have some big political enemy or something, we'll give him our steely glances. But if his child comes, then we'll think, nice little child. So Prahlad Maharaj was just a little child. But apart from that, he was a pure devotee. He was better than all the demigods. The demigods, after all, are still attached to their own post, their own enjoyment. But Prahlad Maharaj was still more advanced. Krishna reciprocates according to the advancement of the devotee. So the Lord placed his hand on Prahlad's head. Placed his hand, his paw, I guess. Placed his paw on Prahlad's head. That Prabhupada explained that one time, this Tavakara Kamala Parena Kama Bhuta Shringa. Tavakara Kamala, your hand is like the Kama, the lotus flower. But within the lotus, there are sharp nails. Lotus is very soft, beautiful flower. But within that flower, there are sharp nails. So it's adbhuta. Adbhuta, Prabhupada said, it can mean surprising. Prabhupada translated it unnatural. The natural thing is that in a lotus flower, you'd expect to find pollen and, you know, stamens and all of that flower parts. But in this lotus flower, there are sharp nails. Dalita Hiranyakashipu, just to kill Hiranyakashipu. So Nrisimhadev put that same hand on the head of Prahlad Maharaj. That same hand, which had been death to Hiranyakashipu, was a blessing for Prahlad. Srila Sridhar Swami comments that the Nrisimhadev is very fearsome for the demons, but he's very affectionate to the devotees like Prahlad. So when the Lord placed his hand on the head of Prahlad Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj became ecstatic and fearless also, and empowered to offer prayers to the Lord. Dhruva Maharaj also, when he saw the Lord, he was stunned. And then the Lord touched his head with his kancha, and Dhruva was empowered to offer nice prayers to you, Lord. one can pray to the Lord by the mercy of the Lord. If one wants to glorify Krishna, one can only glorify Krishna by the grace of Krishna. So Prahlad received that grace, that mercy of Krishna, and he began to offer his prayers to the Lord. First it said, the frogs are also engaged in kirtan. Okay. It's described how Prahlad, after receiving the Lord's hand, he became freed of all material contaminations and desires. He became transcendentally situated, and all the symptoms of ecstasy became manifest in his body. His heart filled with love, and his eyes with tears, and thus he was able to completely capture the lotus feet of the Lord within the core of his heart. That was his situation. Completely purified. Didn't matter that he was born of a demon. Nothing mattered. He was completely situated on the transcendental path. So he fixed his... Okay, go. You want to go? Who's talking? Not me, that's for sure. Okay. Prahlad Maharaj fixed his mind and sight on the Lord with full attention, and then with a faltering voice he began offering his prayers. And he... Of course, they're long prayers. They're about 50, 60 verses. We don't have so much time. And even to summarize them is not really possible. But he first expressed his disqualification that we've already discussed. And many topics he talks about. The Lord, when the Lord appears, he says, he does so for the benefit of the devotee, not for his own benefit. The Lord doesn't need us to glorify him, but it's for our benefit that we glorify the Lord. One time Prabhupada said, Krishna doesn't need your dal, rice, and chapatis. It's not that he'll starve if we don't offer him something, but it's for us, our benefit. And the example Prahlad gave of how the Lord benefits the devotees, that when you decorate your face, then your face in the mirror becomes decorated automatically. No one stands before the mirror decorating the mirror so that the face will be nicely decorated. But when you decorate your own face, then the face in the mirror is automatically decorated. So the living beings are reflections of Krishna. So when we glorify Krishna, we also automatically become glorious. Then, the Lord, let's see. He asks Lord Nrisimhadeva, now you can please give up your anger now that Hiranyakashipu has been killed. He said, everyone is satisfied because this demon has been killed. Even the saintly persons take pleasure in the killing of a snake or a scorpion. Probably you've heard that story that Prabhupada told in that regard. Most of us, many of us have heard it. And Prabhupada told one incident that one time he was at the ashram of his Guru Maharaj, and some godbrother said that there was a snake. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, I think, was on the balcony, and he told them, you kill it. And so they started closing in on the snake, and the snake is seeing them and frightened. And finally they killed him. And Srila Prabhupada said that he was a little perplexed that Guru Maharaj is a sadhu, he's a saintly person, Vaishnav, but the sadhus, they don't like to, they're non-violent, they don't want to see harm come to any other living entity. So why has he ordered this snake killed? Little perplexed. And then Prabhupada said some, I don't know, maybe years later, sometime later, he read this passage from Srimad Bhagavatam, and then he was satisfied that even a saintly person is pleased when a snake or a scorpion is killed, because those living entities simply live to create harm to others. So it's good for others and good for them also when they're killed. So Prahlad said that, yes, it's very good that you've killed this demon. Even the sadhus are happy about that. And he said that I'm not afraid of your ferocious features, your sharp, piercing teeth, your frowning eyebrows, your eyes as bright as the sun, your ferocious mouth and tongue, your garland of intestines, your mane soaked with blood, your wedge-like ears, your tumultuous roaring. I'm not afraid of that. But I'm afraid of this material existence. Then he said to the Lord, let's see, we can read this. Trastosmiham kripana vatsala tusaro gra sangsara chakra kadana vishasatam pranita vadha svakarma bir ushattama tengri unham prito bhavarga sharanam vyayase kadanu. Most powerful, insurmountable Lord, you're kind to the fallen souls. I've been put into the association of demons as a result of my activities, and therefore I'm very much afraid of my condition of life within this material world. When will that moment come when you will call me to the shelter of your lotus feet, which are the ultimate goal for liberation from conditioned life? And Prabhupada's commentary, it's short, we can read it. Being in the material world is certainly miserable, but certainly when one is put into the association of asuras, who are atheistic men, it's intolerably so. One may ask why the living entity is put into the material world. Indeed, sometimes foolish people deride the Lord for having put them here. We see that the people are, you know, if there were a God, why would he put me into this kind of, why would he subject me to, why would he subject the world to this and that? So this for them is proof that there's no God. I was on an airplane one time, anyway, it's a long story, but this person, that was it for him. His parents have been in great difficulty, great suffering. And that's the point where he just gave up on God. How could there be God? When he even began to cry as he was telling me about it. How could there be a God when there's so much suffering? But therefore, actually everyone is put into conditioned life according to his own karma. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj, representing all the other conditioned souls, admits that he was put into life among the asuras because of the results of his karma. The Lord is known as Kripanavatsala because he's extremely kind to the conditioned souls. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, therefore, the Lord appears whenever there are discrepancies in the execution of religious principles. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanya bhavati bhavata tadatmanam sridhamina. The Lord is extremely anxious to deliver the conditioned souls, and therefore he instructs all of us to return home back to Godhead. Sarvatarmanam pratyajamane kamshami kamshami. Prahlad Maharaj expected that the Lord, by his kindness, would call him back again to the shelter of his lotus feet. In other words, everyone should be eager to return home back to Godhead, taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, and thus being fully trained in Krishna consciousness. We'll read one more verse. Yas ma priya priya vyoga sanyoga yajanna shok agnina shakala yoni shudayamana dukaushatam tadapitukkamatatiyaham bhuman brahmani vadame tavadasya yoga. O Great One, O Supreme Lord, because of combination of pleasing and displeasing circumstances, and because of separation from them, one is placed in a most regrettable position within heavenly or hellish planets, as if burning in a fire of lamentation. Although there are many remedies by which to get out of miserable life, any such remedies in the material world are more miserable than the miseries themselves. Therefore, I think that the only remedy is to engage in your service. Kindly instruct me in such service. Prabhupada explains in his purport that both the rich man and the poor man are miserable. Prahlad would have inherited his father's property, which extended throughout the world. But Prahlad Maharaj was not inclined to accept such material opulence. For whether one is in the heavenly or hellish planets, or is a rich or a poor man's son, material conditions are everywhere. Therefore, no condition of life is at all pleasing. If one wants the uncontaminated pleasure of blissful life, he must engage himself in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Material opulence may be somewhat pleasing for the time being, but to come to that temporary pleasing condition, one must work extremely hard. When a poor man is rich, he may be better situated, but to come to that position, he had to accept many miseries. The fact is that in material life, whether one is miserable or happy, both conditions are miserable. If one actually wants happy, blissful life, one must become Krishna conscious and constantly engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. That is the real remedy. The entire world is under the illusion that people will be happy by advancing in materialistic measures counteract the miseries of conditional life. But this attempt will never be successful. Humanity must be trained to engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. That is the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement. There can be no happiness in changing one's material conditions, for everywhere there is trouble and misery. I was just thinking of air conditioning as an example. It's not actually for pleasure, it's just to reduce our misery. And sometimes the air conditioning is more miserable than the heat. In any case, you have to pay for it. Sometimes it sends the whole grid down. The whole electrical grid goes down because everyone's running their air conditioning and their this and their that. There's so much trouble. You have to pay for it. And finally, it's not just because your room is air-conditioned you'd be happy. You have to live with the same mind, whether it's cool or hot. So this is the only remedy, Krishna consciousness. So some comments, some questions. Further in the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Mm-hmm.
that created that Eta Chandra.
Can you elaborate on that instruction that Srila Prabhupada gave the devotee in regards to anger?
Yeah. That instruction that Prabhupada gave that I'm getting free from anger. Anger is in the mind, first of all. You know, there's an old story about anger, kind of a funny story from the old vaudeville days, those who might have some inkling what vaudeville was, about a man who needed a jack. Do you know that story? There's a man whose car broke down by the side of the road. He's got a flat tire. He couldn't go ahead. So he thought, well, okay, I'll change the tire. But he looked in his trunk and he didn't have a jack. So then he thought, well, somebody will have a jack somewhere. And so he began walking. It was one of those desolate kind of places, but he figured he'd gradually find somebody. And then he started thinking that, well, sooner or later I'll find someone. But then, what if he won't give me his jack? But, I mean, anyone would, you know, I just broke down with my car, I just need to fix my flat tire, and then certainly any decent person would give me his jack. What kind of person is it that, you know, wouldn't give you a jack under circumstances like that? He'd have to be the most miserly, most miserable, most mean-minded person. But, you know, I'm a decent guy. Why wouldn't anyone give me a jack unless they were just a total? And he's going on like that, thinking about it. And anyone who wouldn't give a jack to a broken-down traveler has just got to be the most vicious, most mean-hearted, most petty person in the material world. And anyway, he finally comes to a house and knocks on the door, and the person answers, and he says, "Keep your lousy jack." So it all starts in the mind. All this anger is in the mind. And we see that. Kama, kroto, when our desires are not satisfied, then anger develops. And krotat bhavati sam mohat, one becomes bewildered. Sam mohat smriti vibhramaha, he forgets who he is, what he is, what he's doing. Smriti brahmashad buddhi nasho, his intelligence is totaled, wiped out. And buddhi nashad pranashati, when his intelligence is gone, he's finished. And we see this in newspaper headlines. A man gets angry at his wife and takes out something and bludgeons her and maybe kills her. And is found in his apartment weeping, "I've killed my wife. What have I done?" And so many violence. Most, I think, violence is domestic violence. And this domestic violence so much has to do with this one's angry at that one and that one's angry at this one. And it all begins with the mind. So because the mind is absorbed in this angry mood, it grows, it gets out of hand. Just like lusty desire, if some lusty thought crosses your mind, you can deal with it. Chant Hare Krishna or say, "That was a stupid thought," something. But if you start focusing on it and letting it rattle around in your head, jayato vishayapam sangasteshu vijayate, then it becomes stronger. Then you want to associate with whoever she is, or whoever he is. "Hi, where are you from?" Sangat sanjayate kama, then lusty desires increase. So it grows. By meditating, Prabhupada said, material life begins when you see a girl and you think, she's nice. For the girls, it starts the other way. That's cute. So by meditating on that, and it grows, and then once it grows, it becomes more difficult to control, like fire. A little fire, you throw a little water on it and it's finished. But if it, once it starts growing, if it's neglected, then it becomes practically impossible. Or debt is another example. You know, a little debt, you pay it and you're done with it. But if you neglect it, and then 27% interest on your credit card, and it grows and it grows, and then what am I going to do? I owe the bank $3,000 or $15,000 or whatever it is, dollars. I don't know what I'm going to do. Or disease, if it's neglected, it grows. So anger grows. We become angry, and if we feed that anger, we meditate on it. We absorb ourselves, and I'm angry, and I've got a right to be angry, and anyone would be angry, and the things they did, and the way she treated me, and the thing they said, and in fact, you start pounding something. This is the sign of anger. The skin starts to turn red, and one moves his arms and legs, and sometimes one strikes things. These are all mentioned in the third canto as signs of anger. So as when the anger is growing like that, it becomes very difficult to control. But if one remembers Lord Nrisimhadev is transcendental to all three modes of nature. His anger is from passion and ignorance. But Lord Nrisimhadev is transcendental. And when Lord Nrisimhadev is in the mind becomes purified. The topic is anger. I'm as angry as Lord Nrisimhadev. Well, as soon as Lord Nrisimhadev is there, then the mind starts to become purified. You can think of Lord Nrisimhadev because he's in the mood that you're in. You're angry and he's angry. So you can just think of like Krishna playing on his flute, attracting the gopis, and the deer are... It reminds you of Vrindavan. They sound like the rickshaw runners. But they stop. It's nice. Courteous. But where were we? So anger? Oh, right. So to think of like the deer listening, perking their ears and listening to Govinda playing his flute. That sort of thing is hard to remember when you're when you're angry, or to remember beautiful prayers, or to so many things. You're angry; it's hard to remember. But to think of Lord Nrisimhadev is possible because he's angry. He's more angry than you are, so he fits right in that mood. So when you're angry, Prabhupada said, you can think of Lord Nrisimhadev, who's unlimitedly angry. And although he's angry, his anger is transcendental. There's a place in first canto dealing with the punishment of Ashwatthama, which describes that Arjuna was looking at he was angry with coppery red eyes, and that Krishna was angry with his lotus eyes, little red in his eyes. So Krishna's always transcendental. So Lord Nrisimhadev, even when he's angry, Krishna, when he's apparently lusty, he's transcendental. When he's stealing, he's transcendental. When he's killing, he's transcendental. When he's angry, he's transcendental. So if we think of Krishna in any of his transcendental moods, our heart becomes purified. Sukadeva Goswami says that by thinking about the pure activities of Krishna with the gopis, one is purified and freed from material lusty desires. So by thinking of the anger of Lord Nrisimhadev, the angry mood of Lord Nrisimhadev, freed from material anger and becomes purified. Okay. Something else?
Mm-hmm. Prahlad was offended. He was offended so egregiously that he never became angry.
No, Prahlad never became angry.
He took the adage, you know, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord.
He sure does say it. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. Yes, Prahlad, I can be tormented, that's all right. A devotee tolerates, but the Lord doesn't tolerate offenses to the pure devotee. And vengeance is mine. Of course, even when the Lord is showing apparent vengeance or punishment, even that is his kindness. The Lord is not just vague. Yes. Yeah.
I'm wondering if you could explain the difference.
That anger is also transcendental. When the devotee is insulted or some offense is created toward him, the devotee doesn't become angry. He thinks, like as Prahlad said, because of my karma, this is coming. And only a little bit I deserve worse. They're saying these things about me, but if they really knew about me, what could they say? So he accepts it. He's inclined to be kind, to think, well, maybe this person is just bewildered by Maya. It's his own misfortune. But Krishna doesn't tolerate the offenses to his devotees. And the devotee doesn't sit by idly and listen to the two offenses committed to another devotee. To himself, all right, but not to others. If possible, he'll defeat that person. Or else, if there's nothing else he can do, he leaves. Not to hear blasphemy of a devotee, criticism of a devotee. It's very corrosive to devotional service. We should not hear criticism of devotees. Okay. A devotee does get angry that the Vaishnava Bhapara is being committed. Yes?
On the subject of the gopis of Krishna, that you say that it's that one has lustful desires, then to think of Krishna and the gopis and their pastimes is like purifying, or that will purify you. So, similarly, when I was in Mayapur, there's some very beautiful artwork that's been done, and I think maybe it's been done by a part of another, not ISKCON, but anyway, the point is that the pictures look very beautiful, and some advanced devotees were saying, this isn't the right move, because, you know, they look, Krishna and Radha were looking at each other, and maybe that could be perceived in a lusty way, or make someone feel more lusty or something. So I wasn't sure how Prabhupada, or you know, how we should.
How should we think about this artwork?
Because it's beautiful. To me, it just reminded me of Krishna and Radha, because it looks like one of their pastimes. But to other, maybe more senior brahmacharis or something, maybe they think that's an agitating type of thing. So what would you say?
But how do we deal with this art? Do we see it as beautiful? Do we see it as passionate or arousing lust? What are we supposed to think of it? It requires some. We have to follow the discrimination of the advanced devotee, or especially Srila Prabhupada set the standard for us, or he gave us the guidance and example. And he appreciated the pictures of Radha Krishna, but he very much disapproved when it seemed that Radha and Krishna were being made out to be like a lusty boy and girl of this material world. You know, a romance, that it was when it simply seemed like the romance of this material world. A good example is the Rasa dance pictures. My favorite Rasa dance picture is the one done by Devahuti Dasi, which appeared in the original Krishna book, I think. It's very charming. I don't know if it's still there, but a very charming picture. The gopis and Krishna all look like very innocent and like, not like dolls exactly, but you know, it's as pure as like when children are playing. When children are playing, whatever they're doing, nobody thinks, oh, a bunch of lusty kids. They're children. So when, in this Rasa dance picture, Krishna and the gopis look just so charmingly innocent, and the pastime appears very pure. And Prabhupada appreciated that painting. And then later, the artists became more sophisticated, and at one point they were especially appreciating the Renaissance art and Chavskuro and all of that stuff, and the great works of Rembrandt and Raphael and so on. And they wanted to do a more realistic Rasa dance. And they engaged some of the devotees, as they did for so many paintings, to pose for the different figures. And they did a completely new Rasa dance, really with everyone in the spirit of things. And the gopis' hairs are all, you know, long, and the dance is really going on. And Prabhupada hated it. He said it looks like a hippie dance. And it just looked, you know, lusty, and Prabhupada just hated it. You know, who has, you know, done this, and, you know, that sort of approach. Because it didn't have that same innocent spirit that was there in the original. So there are many such paintings, Prabhupada mentions them in his purports, where the realization of the artist was not so exalted, and the portrayal is such that it will remind us more of the material world and the affairs of men and women in lusty engagements. And people appreciate it, because Radha and Krishna are a young boy and a young girl, and they're in love, and they have so many romantic meetings, and they're appreciating all of those things, thinking that Krishna is an ordinary boy and Radharani is an ordinary girl, and that it's something that what they experience between themselves is something like what he experiences with his wife or his girlfriend in the material existence. And so, catering to that, people, you know, sort of play up on it and make Krishna very, what's the word? Well, you know, very amorous according to their idea. And that's not appreciated. Apart from that, the whole subject matter of Krishna's dealings with the gopis are confidential. So Prabhupada also said, why are they always after that picture? Why do they always want those pictures? Why not Krishna and Arjuna on the battlefield? Why not Krishna as Varaha? Why not Krishna in so many, killing Aristasura, Krishna killing Bakasura, Krishna and Nagasura, Krishna and Yashoda, Krishna and Balaram? No, it's always got to be Krishna and Radharani, and it's always got to be something like what we like in this world. So that was Prabhupada's attitude, and he was careful about these things. Just like in Krishna Katha, he sometimes would speak about Radha and Krishna, but see how much. In all so many lectures, in so many classes, in so many books, so many purports, he speaks about Radha and Krishna, but how much? Not very much. And just like we read now about Lord Nisringadev, what was there about Radha and Krishna? And even if we go to so many portions, if you read Bhagavad Gita, what is there about Radha and Krishna? They're there, but a little carefully. A little carefully. Because Prabhupada said, no matter how many times you tell them, this is not this, this is not this, this is not this, they'll hear it and they'll think, this is this. And you tell them it's not like love, the love of this material world, and they'll say, yeah, and then they'll still think it's like the love of this material world. So Prabhupada said, we shall be very cautious about such things. Reserved. Just like some confidential topics in your family. You may sometimes mention them, but you don't just kind of like hang them out on the internet for public consumption, because they're likely to be misunderstood. They're confidential. So Prabhupada was a little careful, but not little, very careful about these things. He would mention them, but a little with reservation and always careful to give the context. So the gopis are saying, my dear Lord, as you say in Bhagavad Gita, he's framing these dealings of Krishna with the gopis within the context of philosophical understanding. So that, of course, doesn't give us an immediate answer. This painting is good, that painting's not good. But it gives us some, perhaps some background by which to evaluate the circumstance. Okay, does that help? Even there's a painting which is very popular in ISKCON, done by Jadurani in recent years, of Radha and Krishna sitting on a seat with gopis on both sides. I think you all know that painting. And it was done under the inspiration of Srila Narayan Maharaj. And in recent times, Jadurani has asked us to try to do whatever we could to stop the ISKCON temples from publishing this picture. Because every ISKCON temple uses cards and magazines and this and that, and they've got reproductions on the walls, and they... It's such a popular picture, you see it a lot, and it's in White Bazaar, and you know, posters and this and that. And she asked us to do whatever we could to stop the temples from publishing. Obviously we can't stop the White Bazaar people, but at least in ISKCON. And she said that Srila Narayan Maharaj had been disturbed. He said that this was his personal, he had personally directed her how to do it, and said that it was very confidential and not something just to be out there in the marketplace. So even Srila Narayan Maharaj, who has something of a reputation for being more liberal with these things than we're accustomed to being in ISKCON, also, you know, drew a line that, no, this is not meant for public consumption. It's not meant to be in every tea stall in Vrindavan. It's, or let's speak of, you know, all over the West. These things are confidential. Is that okay? Yeah. Yeah, a child at that age cannot be lusty. Prabhupada said he was 8 years old, maybe. People, it's almost the clue to Well, I shouldn't say that. I was just going to say something extemporaneous. But Narottam Das Thakur says, Vishya Chodiya Kave Shuddhavima. When will my mind be purified? Then I'll be able to understand Vrindavan. Then I'll be able to understand. So it begins with chanting Hare Krishna, avoiding 10 offenses, trying to cleanse the mind by sincere chanting and hearing, by hearing from these books, by serving the deities, by performing devotional service under proper guidance, so that gradually we'll come to that point where we'll be able to appreciate these exalted topics. Otherwise, Prabhupada said, if we just jump in, then we will, instead of becoming purified, he said, we'll become putrefied. So everything has to be done under expert guidance. That's really the conclusion. How do we know what to do? We follow our spiritual master, we follow the expert guides who can give us direction. Yes?
What is the Sanskrit, only with the, when the eyes are tinged with the ointment of love?
Now, premanjanashtrita bhakti vilojaya. The eyes of love will be able to see. Shall all of the hungry devotees, shall we stop here? Okay. Yes, sir. Thank you all very much. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.
Thank you.